Sit down and buckle up. It's time for the Pirate Monk Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are glad to have you. This is Pablito, and I'm here with...
Rob, great to be with you, Pablito.
What's up, brother?
Good to see you, my friend.
What's going on? Yeah, it's good to be with you again in this... we get to record another bumper for a great interview coming up, but... Before we get to the interview, I have a little inside knowledge. So this is a little lead-in question, but I know for our listeners, I really would love for you to share. Did you have a special weekend recently? Did you do any kind of an impromptu trip somewhere?
Yes. Thank you. And by the way, I agree with you. What an honor to be able to help Nate and Aaron as they continue to do an amazing job hosting the podcast. And I feel really lucky to do this with you and also to just be part of the listener's story and their journey toward healing and growth. Yeah, I had a friend last weekend ping me and said he's driving down to Atlanta for the Allender Center Story Workshop Conference. I have done a lot of work with that crew. I think a lot of listeners have, whether it's through podcasting or reading, or potentially attending some of their stuff, but I have never participated in person. And so I said, why not? So I drove down there Friday. We stayed in Athens, Georgia, nice little college town, about an hour away. And it was amazing. Saturday all day with Dan, Kathy, Alorzel, and of course, Adam Young, for those that have listened to his work, or were at the retreat. So it was a good weekend. Good to be amongst 300 like-minded people who showed up to say, hey, I want to know more about why I live and act and behave today. And of course, the theory is in order to do that, I want to go back in time and figure out what happened to me and how do I make sense of that? How do I bring truth and grace, kindness, all the emotions to that part of my life so that I can imagine a better future. And it was a wonderful day.
Wow. That's awesome. The Huey Lewis song, gonna go back in time. You know, we're probably gonna get sued with copyright infringement since I just did that. But I have impulsivity issues, just like you impulsively went to Atlanta. I pulled you into my impulsivity issues. No, that was it. I love the anyway. So I appreciate that. What is the impulsive nature of that? Was that, how did you feel about that? Did anything come up? Were you like me, decision making and pros and cons, or you know, do I go for this? I don't know anything. How did you make that decision, and was it worth it?
Yeah. Great question. You know, I had nothing. I mean, here's what it came down to. I had nothing going on. It was either going to be relaxed all weekend and kind of do the routine, or invest in myself, invest in a relationship with someone that I've been walking with now as a friend for a couple of years. And I got to do both. And the best part about it is that while I didn't know what I needed on Saturday during the 8 or so hours we were together, what I experienced was a renewed spirit in me to call me back to kindness and self-compassion.
Nice.
And I just, again, I didn't know that I needed that. I have been in a season of struggle where coming out of a relationship last fall that didn't turn out the way that I wanted to, I have really been struggling with this idea that I'm not worthy and I'm not valued, and that the way this person saw me is the truth about me. And there's a part of me that knows that's not true, but at the same time, there are old tapes and old messages that have been just kind of whispering in my ear for about 4 or 5 months now that have said, yeah, you're not enough and you need to work harder or you need to hustle. And what Saturday did for me, again, is as much content as I've engaged with all of the Allender Center grads, it was really important for me to hear live And I could just feel that sense of calling from the Spirit to say, yes, this is again available for you. And I want to renew that inside of your body. So that's what I experienced. I remember a couple of times just, you know, coming to tears as God was whispering that voice and almost saying, I want to replace the voice of doubt. I want to replace the voice of shame that you're experiencing. And I want to fill it with my goodness and my love and my mercy and my grace and my kindness. And that's what I needed. I didn't know that's what I needed. Didn't know that's what I was looking for, but that's what I experienced.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Such a gift. And, you know, your work is my work, right? That's something that we say in recovery circles. And I just, I hear, you know, Ian, you and I and some other brothers, sometimes we've tried to place a value on taking risks, right? We talk about relational risks, but there are other types of worthwhile risks. And I just want to honor that. You took a risk of stepping out of your routine, stepping out of what felt safe, and literally driving for hours and responding to somebody's invitation and receiving that grace, you know, that gracious invitation and stepping into it. And then just even taking the risk to share it now with knowing there'll be listeners that know more about your story and know you on a deeper level. So it's honorable and it's impactful for me and for other people who will be listening. So I just want to say that out loud and thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for asking. Thanks for being part of my life. I know that I got to check in with you and some other brothers along the way. There were some moments that were triggering for me that activated some of the parts of me that I had to tend to as well. And I've spent some time since then listening to those parts, figuring out what they're trying to tell me. And, you know, through all of that, it was just a really good experience to reconnect with myself and, mm-hmm. and check back in, something that I've been struggling to do for a while. So yeah, absolutely. It's, for those listeners, I know we've done a lot of guest speakers around Allender Center grads. So there's a big theme for over the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard, if you have questions, want to engage on that, there's a lot of guys that have ventured down that road to look into the dark caves of their lives and name the truth of what happened, whether it was big T, little T trauma, and have seen and experienced a new level of growth in their recovery journey. So don't be ever be afraid to reach out to any of those guys or myself as we continue to do life together.
Absolutely. I just want to note one more thing that really resonates. It feels really familiar to me. And you mentioned something to the effect of, I didn't really know what I needed until you opened up and you allowed the process to unfold of feeling safe, feeling love, being curious about your story, engaging it with safe people. And I want to mention that because that is so crucial, you know, that is so helpful. Especially it resonates with me because I am a person that I learned to just keep plugging away and moving forward in life, raised by well-meaning but parents that were very emotionally aloof and not present emotionally. And so I've read recently that can be an issue, you know, with people who are raised by emotionally absent parents like myself. I don't know what I'm feeling sometimes. And maybe it's not even just people raised in that environment. I'm not the only one that does that came to Stamson kind of trying to figure out what I'm feeling, where my heart's at, what do I need right now? How can I tend? And by the way, guys, that's where the gospel plays. I don't want to get preachy, but I've found the gospel more by looking internally into where I'm at than I have from the people. You know what I'm trying to say? Like I love the Bible. Absolutely. I just, sometimes people can use the Bible for their own, in their own system, you know? The thing about that is it can limit the power of the gospel. I didn't know the gospel was there to tell me that I'm, like you talked about wrestling for your worthiness, right? The gospel, if I'm leaning on him, I'm going to know I'm worthy just because, right? I don't have to wrestle with it. I don't have to struggle for my worth. I am valuable because, look, he died on the cross for me. That shows my value, intrinsically right there within it. Yeah. Anyway, I just love that. So I appreciate you. We'll talk more after this interview that Nate has with a special guest here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
We in the Samson Society love our meetings. And we love what happens between the meetings, in friendships. We know that recovery requires relationship, that the opposite of addiction is connection. And we've also learned that there are times when we've plateaued in our recovery, or if we've suffered a setback, when it really helps to make a connection outside the meeting with an expert coach or therapist. And we've featured a lot of those people on this podcast, including the Hunters, Roan and Roe and Eva Hunter of LifeWorks Counseling in Madison, Mississippi. The Hunters are thoroughly Christian and fully trained, certified sex addiction therapists. They and their staff work with individuals and with couples dealing with addiction and with betrayal trauma. And you don't have to live in Mississippi to see them. You can actually reach them at lifeworks.ms and connect with them through telehealth. And you may not need to commit to a long-term connection with them. Maybe what you need is to attend one of the several intensives that they run each year for the Samson Society. To reach the Hunters at LifeWorks, simply go to lifeworks.ms or give them a phone call at 601-790-0583. That number again, 601-790-0583. LifeWorks Counseling is a sponsor of the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are privileged to have with us this week as our guest a new author, Ashley Chestnut. Ashley serves as the Associate Young Adult Minister at the Church at Brook Hills in Birmingham, Alabama. She has an MDiv degree from Beeson Divinity School, a Certificate of Biblical Counseling from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and she is the author of a book called It's Not Just You, Freeing Women to Talk About Sexual Sin. Welcome, Ashley.
Hi, glad to be here.
So I imagine that in your work with young adults, working with singles, there and a great church, by the way, in Birmingham, sexual issues come up from time to time in your office and in your conversations. Is that how this book
more
started?
Than just it is, and it's more than just time to time. So it started, I started out in college ministry. That's my background. And mm-hmm. I was leading a college small group while I was in seminary. And so I was on a college campus, and about 3 years into walking with the same group of girls, I started with them freshman year, fall mm-hmm. of their junior year, I had a conversation with just one of them in the food court on the college campus. And we had been talking about why she didn't feel close to God. Mm-hmm. And I had just given her, hey, there's several things could be here. First of all, we don't always feel close to God. Right. Like, and that's so there could be nothing here, but there could be something here. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things in the list of think reasons that I mentioned, I said it could be that there's unconfessed sin or sin you're not dealing with. Mm-hmm. And she came back to me a week or two later and she was like, Ashley, that's it. Like, mm-hmm. as soon as you said that, like I knew. And she was struggling with masturbation. Mm-hmm. And she told me that, and I encouraged her to share that with one or two other of her close friends who are also in our small group. And she did. And every time she shared, that person was like, me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. Mm-hmm. And so it ended up that about half of the girls I was discipling at that time were all struggling with a variety of sexual sins, pornography, mm-hmm. sex with their boyfriends, like a variety thing. And not all were addicts, but there were one or two of them that I was like, the way you're talking about this is a lot more obsessive and compulsive than the ways that some of the other girls are talking about this. And at that time in seminary, I was taking some counseling courses, and one of my counseling professors was, or is a CSAT, who's a certified sex addiction therapist. And he had us read Patrick Carnes, Out of the Shadows. And as I was reading that and thinking about the girls I was meeting with, just things started clicking where I was like, I think this is an addiction. And, you know, I'm in my early 20s. I'm not much older than these girls. What do I know about walking with an addict? You know?
Right, sure.
And besides Patrick Carnes, I didn't really even know what else to read or females out there talking about this. I later found Marnie Faree's book, Marnie No Stones, but which was huge, so helpful for me and for the girls I walk with. But it just started me on this journey of trying to look for resources that my girls could read where they were at and that were from a Christian perspective. Talking about some of these ethics and questions. And so walked with those girls all through college. A lot of them stayed a fifth year, so we had a victory lap. And and I learned so much. But when that season was over, I was like, whew, that was a season. We've all made it. Everybody's at a good or growing place. And about 3 months after they graduated, I was getting ready to start a new small group. And don't you know, I had five girls in 1 week that were all just from our church and wanting to talk to me about these types of struggles and issues. And that's when I realized I need more training. This isn't isolated. This wasn't just one group of girls. And I was picking up on that because my girls were connecting me to other girls on campus and their sororities. And even within our church. And I think once people know that there's somebody safe to talk to, they just start seeking you out on any number of issues. But a willingness to talk about it just opened a can of worms. And in the midst of all of this, you start realizing, oh, there's trauma with most of these situations. And I wasn't trained to deal with trauma. I went to seminary to learn Greek and Hebrew. I didn't go. I was very much seeing myself as like an Old Testament professor, not talking to girls all day about masturbation and pornography. And so God just led me on a very different path of ministry. And so I do young adult ministry. I work with young professionals, young couples, and this just continues to come up. And so I did go back for a counseling certificate. I've done some trauma trainings, and I'm a facilitator for a trauma curriculum. And so just walking with people, and I could have gone the counselor route. But I feel like a missing piece in this conversation for believers is we don't have people in the church that can walk with people and be part of your support system. Like you need your counselor, and I'm going to refer you to one. You need a recovery group. I'm going to refer you to one. But you also need people that aren't in either of those camps who can be here and talk to you and process maybe some of the spiritual things that maybe your counselor doesn't have time to talk to you about, but somebody that has a baseline understanding of trauma and addiction that can also talk to you.
So yeah.
That's where I am right now.
Wow. Was it a huge revelation to you when trauma began to appear regularly in the stories of the women you were talking to? How did you make that initial connection? And then what implications did that have in the way you were approaching the conversations you were having with girls, with women?
So I think the more stories that I heard, the more I became aware of what questions to ask. So when I was hearing about, I would ask, like, so when did this start for you? And yeah. It was one thing for it to start, you know, as a teenager, high school, college student, and maybe be exposed through something that you saw when you're older. But if you were starting these behaviors as, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That became more of, okay, how did you know about this at that age? And and so what was going on? And you may not have memories of how you first found out. You may have blocked those out. And again,
sure.
We need some counseling work. I don't need to be necessarily the one helping you figure that out. But it just became a question to ask of just when did this start for you? Or what's your first memory that you have surrounding this? And then also, like, what are you using this to cope with? Like, what's this behavior? Why are you, what are you trying to cope with? Like, this is a symptom of something.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, so that's really the connection there. But just hearing people's stories and hearing commonalities.
I'm well aware of the stigma that's attached to sex addiction in general. And I think an added layer to women who have, for any number of reasons, developed a sex addiction. Somehow in contemporary culture, it's assumed that a red blooded American male is going to have sexual urges and, you know, it's going to be a deal. But especially in the church, there's kind of this general assumption that women are going to be virginal, that they're going to have less of an interest in sex, that they're going to, you know, all that kind of a deal. And so I see on the faces of the women who sometimes approach me after I make a presentation to a mixed audience, at a college, there will be one or two women who will come up later and say, well, nowadays when I make my presentation, I make sure to include the women. Early on, I was focusing on the guys. I was buying into the cultural misconception, really unaware that a lot of the women out there were suffering, and really naive to the fact that pornographers had focused upon women deliberately as an untapped market and were pouring millions of dollars into the creation of highly addictive video material, pornographic material, especially targeted toward the vulnerabilities of women. I'm wondering, so here you have this book for women about sexuality for Christian women. I imagine it's just flying off the shelves. People are standing up in church to recommend it. No, are you finding some headwind there, perhaps, that's shame-based?
I do think there is a lot of shame involved. And that's why I titled it, It's Not Just You. Because you as a Christian female, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
And I've encountered a lot of the shame here in my city because the college I was at it's a Christian college. And so it's not just I'm a Christian female. It's I'm a Christian female at a Christian school. And so, that shame is definitely there. It's not talked about. And increasingly, I'm finding it is talked about more. But I am finding that it's a lot of college ministries and student ministries that are using my book. Also, we don't just go around and tell people what books about sexuality we're reading.
So it's being picked up by college ministries. That's fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah.
You mentioned that if you will refer the girls you talk to a recovery group. Now, there seems to me to be a dearth of recovery groups for women around sexual issues. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're multiplying. Are you finding that there are resources out there, safe places where women can go to talk with other women about sexual issues?
Yes. So thankfully in our city, we have two really strong recovery groups for women, specifically for women. Uh-huh. One is faith-based, and the other is, it's an SAA group, but I know several of the ladies that are in it, and they're all believers. Mm-hmm. The issue that we're running into, or that I'm seeing in actually both groups, is there's not enough sponsors to mm-hmm. go around to meet the demand. And so, so I am seeing that's a problem, that there's just not enough people. I have some girls that are wanting to do the steps, but they can't find a sponsor.
Yeah. You know, we have faced that challenge in the Samson Society, but we have found in our experience that if we get guys together, walking the path together in, you know, with vulnerability and honesty, and if we go beyond accountability to accessibility, so they're giving each other real-time access to all of their life, all the stresses in their life, so we can have daily conversations, even if we don't have a lot of experience in the group. Jesus did promise to be present when two or three of us are gathered in his name, right? There is this unseen presence, and healing happens. Perhaps, you know, it's not as directed always as it would be if we had a veteran in the room, but yeah. So what I'm hearing is that the recovery groups for women are still kind of in an infancy stage. Mm-hmm. But they're growing, and boy, how cool would it be if these develop on college campuses? If that could become a part of normal campus life with a college woman,
wouldn't that be great? Well, and I think with that too, you know, the church also has to be willing to talk about addiction, and the church also has to be willing to point people to recovery groups and normalize that. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
and honestly, I think there's things the church should be learning from recovery groups, because we often fail people that struggle with any number of issues.
Yes.
Because we don't offer the same level of support, and we don't offer the same level of vulnerability to people. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think that's where we as a church have got to do a lot of work if we're going to walk alongside sinners and sufferers.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I imagine that the book has opened some doors for you. What do you see? Do you have a hint as to where you're going, what you're doing next, or where your passion is moving you now?
Yeah. So I seem to be, anytime I delve into an issue, it just leads me straight back to school. So first time around, it led me back to do a counseling certification. When trauma and an initiative at our church happened about caring well for survivors of abuse, mm-hmm. I heard 30 trauma stories in 6 months from girls in our church.
Wow.
So and so I had to do a lot of work with trauma and educating myself, and I got a trauma certification. But also, I had to start really focusing on just personally, how am I staying healthy? Yes. In this, because I started realizing I've got symptoms of secondary trauma. Like I'm mm-hmm. having night terrors. I'm having all of mm-hmm. these things happening. But within the work of trauma, some people I met through that really opened up the door for conversing about an area called neurotheology. And if you're not familiar with neurotheology, that's where, how do we take what we know about neuroscience and how the brain works mm-hmm. and apply it to helping people grow spiritually? Mm-hmm. And how do we take how the brain works and how do we apply that to people growing in their relationship with God? And so, long story short, it's led me back to working on a doctorate.
All right. And so
neurotheology is going to be the focus. I'm only in year one of my doctorate. I got a long way to go. But this is the topic I'm wanting to study because even, for example, this year, just with the little bit of work and training I've done in neurotheology, as I've been applying those tools to the young women that I meet with, including several addicts, I'm seeing it really help their motivation. Mm-hmm. And so, because, you know, nobody's going to take steps if they're not motivated to take steps. Oh,
sure,
sorry.
Sure.
And so, so how do we motivate people to take steps? And that's where coming in, I've started doing more visualization exercises.
Yeah.
And that's part of neurotheology is let's utilize the right hemisphere of the brain. And we know mm-hmm. that images, visuals, that's part of right hemisphere operation. And we process faster on our right hemisphere. That's the fast track of the brain. Mm-hmm. Our left hemisphere is more words and language, and it's our slower track. Mm-hmm. And so so the right track, the right hemisphere, the fast track is how I can go into a room and I can be picking up on emotions and things going on with people in the room. And I'm already responding to it, but I couldn't tell you that with my words.
Right, sure.
So that's, okay, so if that's how the right hemisphere is operating, and if I'm dealing with somebody with addiction, mm-hmm. then what does this mean for how do I address them in the right hemisphere to address motivation, what they're picturing, how they're mm-hmm. responding when they're responding in their addiction and acting out before their left hemisphere is kicking in?
Yeah.
That's part of what we're doing. So I can walk you through some of those visualizations, but that's where I'm going next.
That's where you're going next. That's just absolutely fascinating. Now, I do know that trauma, and trauma can come in many forms, interrupts the normal operation of the brain. Yeah. And in defense against trauma, once we have this memory, this implicit memory of a traumatic event, traumatic experience, or it doesn't even have to be an event, I guess. And the right hemisphere of the brain picks up these signals that I am now entering a dangerous situation. I've got to, mm-hmm. right, I'm triggered, right. Mm-hmm. Now, what I heard you say is that talking to women, you heard trauma stories. What I'm hearing is that those trauma stories are all across the spectrum. There are some, this severe childhood sexual trauma, but you've got other women who don't have that story, but they have trauma that is now impacting their sexual responsiveness, all that kind of stuff. I think that we men are kind of ignorant about what could be traumatic for a woman that might impact her on down the road sexually. Can you kind of do a broad sweep of the spectrum of the kind of things that can impact a woman's life sexually?
Hmm. Oh, wow. That could be quite a variation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you definitely have the extreme would be rape and sexual abuse.
Right. And
Statistically, right now, the most common stats are either 1 in 3 women in the U.S. or 1 in 4 women in the U.S. have been sexually abused.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And statistically, right, with men, it's either 1 in 5 or 1 in 6.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear those stories all the time. Okay.
Yeah. So we're looking at pretty high statistics. Mm-hmm. But I'm also seeing a common story that I hear among girls that were raised in the church, particularly mm-hmm. in pretty legalistic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. It's the not talking about their bodies or sexuality. So this might not necessarily be trauma, but we didn't talk about sex. We didn't talk about our bodies beyond just don't do it.
Right.
And so therefore, when they do get older, I mean, I have a high schooler right now. She's addicted to pornography, but it all started because she would just Google things that her mm-hmm. friends would talk about that she didn't know and she didn't feel like she could talk to her mom about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the curiosity can sometimes be a gateway, mm-hmm. but that's not necessarily trauma. But I'm seeing also just absence and neglect.
Yes.
Lack of parental involvement or things that just happen because parents aren't involved. Mm-hmm. Exposure to sexual things can be traumatic depending on the person. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm seeing it's not something sexually that happened. It might be like the loss of a parent or a divorce, yes, or a parent's, yes, infidelity. And so the child or the teenager or the college student is just wanting to cope with the grief they feel or the anxiety they feel or the anger, yes, they feel. And somewhere along the way, they realize that whether it's masturbation or porn or whatever else, it's that outlet for coping with that emotion.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes the trauma or the, it is sexual, but sometimes it's not. It's just, mm-hmm, the sexual part is how they started coping.
Yes. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We talk these days a lot about stress reduction or distress reduction or distress avoidance behavior. Yeah. This self-soothing behavior. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very, very powerful drug. And you're feeling powerless and afraid and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this, the younger generation, so, and this is like early statistics for Gen Z, is that they are on technology 6+ hours a day.
Okay.
The mental health threshold is 2 hours a day. So when you hit that 2-hour mark, you start seeing declines in a person's mental health. You start seeing an increase in depression, an increase in suicidality. Mm-hmm. And when you combine that to, okay, how much of those 6 hours a day is also at night interrupting your sleep because you're sleeping, mm-hmm, with your phone. And so, yeah, it's buzzing and going off. It's interrupting. You're staying on it way too late. So there's those types of things, mental health, that I'm really seeing all of this used as a coping mechanism for anxiety.
Yes.
And so if we've got a generation that is the most anxious generation thus far in recent, mm-hmm, history, what are their coping mechanisms? What coping mechanisms are we giving them as older adults, as the church?
Right.
And how are we teaching them to cope with their feelings, which means we as believers have to actually talk about emotions and God's design for our emotions.
Now you're talking crazy. Come on.
I know. Sex, emotions, we've got to talk about sex. How much healthier would we be if we didn't suppress?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard those statistics about social media use, especially among them. So if I'm using social media to cope with my anxiety, but it in itself is producing more anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. I'm using social media to address the problems caused by social media, and it's this downward spiral. How much of it is tied into body image and eating disorders, clinical and subclinical? How much of that comes from comparison? One woman comparing myself against what I'm seeing in social media.
Are connections there. I mean, I can't give you statistics on this, but just qualitatively, this connects with sexuality too, because a lot of times people don't have just one addiction. They have multiple.
Sure. Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Or I try to stop one and I start another one. And
right. Right. Right.
So I am seeing it go hand in hand. Oftentimes with eating, sometimes it's the restricting, but sometimes it's the binging, purging. Mm-hmm. And there's a level where that's more socially acceptable for women.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So sometimes you have to see those symptoms and ask the next question of what else might be there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, if I'm designed for intimacy, I'm made for connection. I'm longing to connect. I'm in a culture that says my desirability in the marketplace of relationships is a function of my hotness, and hotness is defined by the culture in such and such a way, or my willingness to cry, to do things. What stuns me now is, from what I gather, I mean, the lines have shifted so far in what's acceptable sexual behavior, mm-hmm, what's threshold behavior and what isn't, right? How far am I willing to go in order to connect? I want to meet a deep, deep intimacy need. And then am I caught in this box canyon of false intimacy that offers, pretends to offer intimacy and delivers something else, and I wind up only lonelier all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I am so glad that the women in your church and in your community have a safe person they can talk to. Someone who has gotten, who has a passion and has been receptive to a calling to do something that you didn't originally intend to do. brave enough to write about it. I'm glad that your curiosity is still alive and you are, learning more and more. I really look forward to seeing where this is going to go for you, what the next book's going to be. I have a sense that I'm talking to a real influencer here on down the road. Yeah. Already, but more to come. Thank you so much for tackling a difficult subject. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. And thank y'all for what you do as well. I mean, we need so many voices. There's not enough voices.
Talking
about this. I will say one story. May I share just one story? And this goes back to the visualization component. And so I have one young lady I've been walking alongside struggling with porn. A believer, became a believer at a young age, grew up in church, and works with a ministry. And so when she and I started meeting, she really just was honest about the fact she hadn't read her Bible in like who knows how long. And so when we were just talking about motivation there, pornography ended up coming out of that. Like we were just that became part of the conversation, and just no motivation to do anything, to read the Bible, pray, or deal with porn, except for like come meet with me like every other week, which is a start. That's huge. And so as I've been reading, what can I do to help you take a step with motivation? Like there's a piece of that, that I can't do motivation for you. And that's you and the Holy Spirit, but what tools do we have? And so one of the things, as I was reading about Right Hemisphere and just view of God, what is her view of God in the midst of this? And what is her perception of how God views her? And so getting at that shame that might be there that maybe she doesn't even know fully what's there, but how do we do this and how do we do this in a safe space? So had her sit down, we did some breathing exercises so that she could focus and be calmed down. And, so in the visual, we just talked about the most recent time. I had her replay the events from the last time that she acted out leading up to actually acting out. So I didn't want her rewatching, herself viewing porn, but where were you? And if you were at your house, where in your house? And what device were you using to access pornography? And what was happening in the hour before, the 10 minutes before, the five minutes before? Like watch yourself in those preceding moments, like you're watching a movie screen in your head. And let's go through the five senses to ground yourself. What were you hearing and seeing and smelling and tasting and touching in those preceding moments? And then we know that the Lord is always with us. And so even as you were preparing to look at porn, God was there and he was present in that room with you. And so place him there as you're visualizing this. What's his body language? What's his posture? What's his facial expression? And what is that communicating? And so I give them some time to sit in that, to visualize that. And then I had her caption it. Like, let's give a word or a phrase to caption the scene. It gives us just a tagline to talk about it, a quick and easy way to talk about it. And then I gave her just whenever she was ready to take some deep breaths and open her eyes. And so... so with that, I'll ask, okay, so what was your caption or phrase? And and I don't remember what hers was, and I'm not going to share that. But with her, the view of God in that moment surprised her. because, you know, when you think about, I'm about to do something wrong. I have this, here's what I'm anticipating as far as how somebody's looking at me when they know I'm about to sin. But the expression and the body posture that she viewed of the Lord in that moment was that he was behind her with his hand on her shoulder and an expression of just loving concern. Like what you are about to do is bad for you and it's going to hurt you. And I'm concerned for you, but there's compassion in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if that's how, and that's a right view of the Lord. If
that's
it was a wrong
right
view
of God, no doubt. Yes. That's a heavenly father, the perfect father. Yeah.
That's right. And there's sometimes the view that comes out is one we need to reframe, and we'll do some reframing visualizations. But what that brought out for her was how God sees her. And I can tell you God is gracious and compassionate and loving. And those words are good, but those words are left hemisphere. That image that she continues to carry with her of God and how he looks at her as he knows that she's about to act out in sin, that creates a much faster picture to remember, to recall, and to turn to. And that's the kind of God I am inclined to turn to, because that's not a God who is looking on me with shame and guilt and condemnation. Right. That's a God that's saying, I care about you, I am here for you, and there's a better way, but I love you. And so I'm seeing visualizations like that be a powerful tool for helping reframe someone's view of God, but also address motivation. And so if that's a helpful tool for somebody, but that's more of what I'm wanting to study. So more to come, hopefully.
Fantastic. Well, listeners, our guest has been Ashley Chestnut. She is the author of It's Not Just You, Freeing Women to Talk About Sexual Sin. Ashley, if our listeners, any of our listeners would like to contact you, is there a way they can do it?
Probably the best way is my email. And I am on Instagram as well. But the main thing people just need to know is to spell the last name correctly if you're going to find me. So, when people see Chestnut, they think like chestnuts roasting on an open fire. And that's not how you spell my last name.
It's they put a T in there like I did when I captioned this show. All right. It's C-H-E-S-N-U-T.
Correct. So achestnut at brookhills.org or eachestnut on Instagram. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ashley, it's been a delight. Thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Yeah, thank you, Nate. Good to meet you.
All right, listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
And we're back. That was a powerful interview. It's Pablito and Rob here with you still, my friends. And Rob, we just listened to that interview with Nate and Ashley Chestnut, and some powerful things. She wrote a book. She's doing a lot, getting training, and I just. It felt like it was she's not going the way she thought she would out of Bible school, maybe, or out of seminary, right? Can you relate, or what comes up for you when you hear her story of helping other people? And there's even a point in there where she said, I need to stop and take inventory of my own self. And I don't know if she used the word self-care, but something to that effect, like she had to take care of her own self. She called it secondary trauma.
Yeah.
I just wondered how that was for you.
Yeah. I thank you for that. And I agree. I'm looking at her book online right now, the title or the cover of her book. And it's so fascinating. She's got all these questions highlighted. Is something wrong with me? Am I not who everyone thinks I am? Do other people feel like this? Is it just me? And she goes on and right there in the middle is highlighted. It's not just you. And powerful. You know, even though her mission and calling is to young women, there was so much overlap between what I experienced as a man and right. how my recovery journey has evolved. What I really, really appreciated about her is just her basic instinct to make disciples. And I know she was in college and mentoring girls, and it's probably been part of her life for a long time, but just sitting down and listening to the struggles of young women in college and right. asking questions, staying curious and listening opened up wow. this door that, like you said, drove her away from being a college professor, right? She's like, I want to be an Old Testament professor. And now is engaging in the lives of women who struggle with unwanted sexual behavior. And it would not have happened without her willingness to make disciples, her willingness to listen and ask questions. And I kept resonating back to that because so many of us on this podcast and listeners listening today do the same thing as a Silas. Like, we are weak and flawed, and yet we still show up and we just ask questions and we listen right. and we be with. And it's amazing to see how that has really impacted her life, which has a lot of parallel to, again, for I think both of us, but also a lot of the listeners online today.
I love it. You guys can't see, but I am like in making celebratory motions with my hands and celebrating Rob's comments, because a lot's coming up as you share that. I love that she just sits with these young ladies and she's with them. Did you know there's a, when Jesus called his disciples, one of the things he said is he calls them and he was with them.
Mm.
And then he sent them out.
Yeah.
He was with them.
Mm.
He knew they were uniquely and beautifully made. He also knew they were human and they were part of a fallen world and a fallen system. But anyway, I love that she was, and everything came out of that. Like, honestly, that I needed to hear that. You know what I mean? I'm glad all of our listeners are hearing this, but I needed to hear that because I can relate to her story. I went to Bible school, and then I went from Bible school to a Christian school. The Bible school was like ministry training, and then the Christian school was more of like an accredited get your degree. And by the way, that's where I first started looking at internet pornography. You know, I had a, I kind of relived that genesis of, you know, or yeah, genesis of my issues. I mean, they really boil down to things earlier in my family of origin as well, but I had been clean. I went to Bible school. I was completely clean of all, you know, like I didn't, there's no masturbation or anything like that going on. And then I went to this college and I had a lot of things in life. I wasn't doing life well. I wasn't with people. I wasn't sharing. I was isolating. In fact, I had a dorm room with no roommate. And then all of a sudden I get a computer, right? And literally, I just go, because I'm a sports guy, I go to Sports Illustrated, right? And I'm just, that's just what I did. And next thing you know, anyway, I go to the swimsuit issue. Hopefully I'm not being too graphic for our listeners, but that's how it all started with me. Actually innocent, just me being, you know, who I am. But the key was I didn't have an Ashley Chestnut in my life that was sitting with me. In fact, Rob, I don't know if you know this about me, but once these behaviors felt out of control and they felt like they were grabbing a hold of me, I called a meeting with the dean, one of the deans at the school. Wow. And I told him, I have a problem with lust on the internet. I don't know what to do. Wow. I need help.
Yes.
Can you please help me? I hated this behavior. And his answer to me was, Paul, you just need more self-control.
Right.
And, you know, he may as well have literally just taken out the Bible verse, the page of that verse that talks about self-control, and just slapped me with it back and forth on my cheek, because it probably would have done the same amount of effect. And I don't, I'm sure he didn't mean that, you know, to hurt, but to affect me. But trust me, I already knew how damaged I was. I already knew how broken. I already knew. That's why it was compulsive and I didn't understand where it was coming from. And that's what I do love the title of her book. And she even mentions it. She wants to address the shame aspect that is easily carried with this, with the stigma and with the actions of sexual sin, sexual acting out, you know, maladaptive behaviors, whatever you want to call it, and unwanted behaviors, right? And so I resonated with a lot of that, and but also the answer that's coming to me as well is, because I've asked myself, even in this stage of my life, what is my ministry?
Right.
What am I called to do?
Yes.
Where is the job description that, you know, Pablito is supposed to fill in the blank? You know what? I'm supposed to just sit with people and listen.
Yes.
Right. That's a great place to start, and care and be with them. And I am doing that, and I'll continue to do that. But just some great points.
I just want to keep running with that for a second, because her willingness to sit with, her willingness to listen and invest in other people's lives, in this case, young women, led to one. Remember the story. She said one person one day had the courage to say, I am struggling with masturbation. And it's that one open door that she helped create that gave the courage, that then gave the courage to other young women to say, uh-oh, me too, which is now bled into a transformation for Ashley to say, yes, all of my schooling and studying is important, but guess what? So is this new mission that I've been called to. And it's just, you know, to your point, what is Paul's mission? What is Rob's mission for every listener? What comes out of this? And the answer is we don't know. But having an open heart to not only be, but to be curious and to listen and to see where God might take that one question, that one confession, that one conversation, and potentially blow it up into something that's multiplicative, which is exactly what Ashley ended up describing throughout the rest of the interview. And I love that. I mean, I just love that. And of course, she's not trauma-informed. Or she didn't start out as trauma-informed, but as she was listening, she's like, there's a theme here. And of course, that made me feel some sort of connection, because I can relate from my own story. And then Ashley went on to continue to invest in her own journey of being even more trauma-informed, and now is working on her PhD. So I don't know. I thought it was such a beautiful example of what a Silas could be. What a friend could be, what a brother could be, what a parent could be, or fill in the blank that any of us could be in our lives if we just show up and stay curious and listen to those that are around us.
Yeah, stay curious. And it sounds like, I mean, I want to mention the word safe, right? There must have been some kind of a level of safety for this brave person to be the one to raise their hand and say,
yes,
I'm struggling.
Yes.
You know, can we, you know, I know it might not be what the next topic of the next, you know, Bible study that we're going to have, because, you know, it's nothing wrong with having structure or a system. I'm just reading into what it may have been like. Right. But I'm really struggling with this right now.
Yes.
And the fact that she was safe enough, to mention that, and this other person was brave enough to bring it up, and something beautiful started. And to your point, like this, you know, Nate had asked about, are there enough? Is there a recovery community for women? Because I have felt that. The few times when you know, my previous church, when it was mentioned, you got to get out of lust and this, we got to stop struggling. It was always a men only issue. And I always felt like, golly, if there's like happens to be one woman in here or whatever the number is that's struggling like I am or I was or whatever, how much shame is that added that it's not even being addressed to her gender? I mean, you know, like, and Nate, I love his humility. He owned up to, you know, where he used to be in addressing crowds and where he's at now. But he asked about the recovery community, and then he ends up. She says that they need more, basically Silas's, right? And so that just speaks to what you're saying. Let's stay on that path and be willing to walk with somebody and spend the time and be a safe place and go from there. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up, bud?
No, good to be with you. Great to be part of this amazing work that Nate and Aaron and Samson do each day, and quite honestly, through the podcast and so many other outlets. And blessed to be with you, to just be a small part of it.
Love you, brother. Thank you all for listening to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We'll see you next time.
The Pirate Monk Podcast is produced by members of the Samson Society. Send your feedback or questions to piratemonkpodcast@gmail.com. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and share the podcast with a friend. For more information, please visit samsonsociety.com.